जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी गोपीजना वल्लभ गिरीवरधारी गोपीजनावल्लभ गिरीवरधारी यशोदानन्दन व्रज जनरञ्जन यशोदानन्दन व्रज जनरञ्जन यमुना तीरावन चारी यमुना तीरावन जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव विहारी जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तर शत श्री श्रीमद हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस ऐसी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की जय ग्रंथराज श्रीमद भागवतम की जय All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga. Narayanam namaskritya naram cheva narottamam devim sarasvatim vyasam tato jaya mudirayet nashtaprayesha bhadreshu nityam bhagavat sevaya bhagavati uttamashloke bhaktir bhavati nashtike ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Chapter 9, Text 8. This is the beginning of the 25 odd verses that Prahlad Maharaj speaks to Lord Narsingadev. So, I guess to appreciate the mood of the verses, this is an exercise in imagination. And if any one of us can get into the reality of it, that's fantastic. But just imagine for a moment. You close your eyes and imagine that Lord Narsingadev has just placed his transcendental paw on our head. And after offering obeisances to Narsingadev, our mind is completely fixed on him. The heart is fully focused on nothing else but Lord Narasingadev. The body is trembling with love, and the first words that come out of Prahlad Maharaj's mouth, just imagine the, let's imagine standing in front of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narasingadev. Wow. Was in this very amazing form. And he says, Shri Prahlad Uvacha. You'll have to open your eyes for the X now because you'll see the verse. So. Brahmadayasura Gana Munayotha Siddha. Sattvaikatanagatayo vachasam pravahai. Naradhitum puraganair adhuna pipipru. Kim toshtumarhati same hari ugrajate. Brahmadayasuragana munayotha siddha. Sattvaikatanagatayo vachasam pravahai. Try as much to be in unison. Naraditum puru gunair adhuna pipipru. Kim toshtum arhati same hari ugrajate. Shri Prahlad Uvacha. Brahmadayasuragana munayotha siddha. Sattvaikatanagatayo vajasam pravahai. Naradhitum puru gunair adhuna pipipru. Kim toshtumar hati same harimugrajate. Brahmadayasuragana munayotha siddha. Sattvaikatanagatayo vachasam pravahai. Naraditum puru gunair adhuna pipipruhu. Kim toshtumar hati same harimugrajate. Okay, one more. Brahmadayasuragana munayotha siddha. Sattvaikatanagatayo vachasam pravahai. Naraditu hiradhati pipru. Kim toshtumar hati same hari ugrajate. Brahmadayasuragana munayotha siddha. Sattvaikatanagatayo vachasam pravahai. Naraditum puru ganai vipro. Kim toshtumar hati same hari ugrajate. Shri Prahlad Uvacha. Prahlad Maharaj prayed. Brahma Adayaha, headed by Lord Brahma. Suraganah, the inhabitants of the upper planetary systems. Munayah, the great saintly persons. Atha, as well, like the four Kumaras and others. Siddhah, who have attained perfection or full knowledge. Sattva, to spiritual existence. Ekatana Gatayaha, who have taken without diversion to any material activities. Vachasam, of descriptions or words. Pravahe, by streams. Na, not. Aradhitum, to satisfy. Purugunaihi, although fully qualified. Adhuna, until now. Api, even. Pipruhu, were able. Kim, whether. Toshtum, to become pleased. Arhati, is able. Saha, he, the Lord. Me, my. Harihi, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Ugrajatehe, who am born in an Asuric family. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Prahlad Maharaj prayed, how is it possible for me, who have been born in a family of Asuras, to offer suitable prayers to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Even until now, all the demigods headed by Lord Brahma and all the saintly persons could not satisfy the Lord by streams of excellent words, although such persons are very qualified, being in the mode of goodness. Then what is to be said of me? I am not at all qualified. Purport. A Vaishnava who is fully qualified to serve the Lord still thinks himself extremely low while offering prayers to the Lord. For example, Krishna Dasa Kaviraj Goswami, the author of Chaitanya Charitamrita, whose appearance day was yesterday, says, Jagai Madhai Haite Muni Se Papishtha Purishera Kita Haite Muni Se Lagishtha. Thus he considers himself unqualified, lower than the worms in stool, and more sinful than Jagai and Madhai. A pure Vaishnava actually thinks of himself in this way. Similarly, although Prahlad Maharaj was a pure, exalted Vaishnava, he thought himself most unqualified to offer prayers to the Supreme Lord. Mahajano Yena Gatha Sapanthaha. Every pure Vaishnava should think like this. One should not be falsely proud of his Vaishnava qualifications. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has therefore instructed us, Trunadapi sunichena taro rivasa hishnuna amanina manadena kirtane asadahari. One should chant the holy name of the Lord in a humble state of mind, thinking oneself lower than the straw on the street. One should be more tolerant than a tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige, and should be ready to offer all respects to others. In such a state of mind, one can chant the holy name of the Lord constantly. Unless one is meek and humble, to make progress in spiritual life is very difficult. So usually in Prabhupada's purports, the last sentence is usually an instruction. So, unless one is meek and humble, to make progress in spiritual life is very difficult. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chuksur Unmelitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha ಶ್ರೀಚೈತನ್ಯ ಮನೋವೀಷ್ಣು ಸ್ಥಾಪಿತಂ ಯೇನ ಭೂತಲೆ ಸ್ವಯಂ ರೂಪ ಕದಾ ಮಹ್ಯಂ ದದಾತಿ ಸ್ವಪದಾಂತಿಕಂ ವಾಂಛಾ ಕಲ್ಪತರುಭ್ಯಶ್ಚ ಕೃಪಾ ಸಿಂಧುಭ್ಯೈವ ಚ ಪತಿತಾನಾಂ ಪಾವನೇಭ್ಯೋ ವೈಷ್ಣವೇಭ್ಯೋ ನಮೋ ನಮಃ. ಶ್ರೀಕೃಷ್ಣ ಚೈತನ್ಯ ಪ್ರಭು ನಿತ್ಯಾನಂದ ಶ್ರೀ ಅದ್ವೈತ ಗದಾಧಾರ್ ಶ್ರೀವಾಸ್ ಆದಿ ಘೋರ ಭಕ್ತವೃಂದ, ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ 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 ಹರೇ ಹರೇ, ಹರೇ ರಾಮ ಹರೇ ರಾಮ 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 ಹರೇ ಹರೇ. ಐ ಮಸ್ಟ್ ಮೇಕ್ ಅ ಡಿಸ್ಕ್ಲೇಮರ್ that in about 45 minutes or even if I'm given an hour or 2 hours, it is difficult to express everything that's there in this verse. So by no means can I cover all the different angles and perspectives, because these are very, very deep words of humility. And even if I'm given, let's say, 2 days, 48 hours to speak on it, I wouldn't be able to access that humility of Prahlad Maharaj. So there was some severe limitations. But we can appreciate some things. Before getting to the specifics and the purport, let's appreciate the mood. Because without the mood, then the purport won't have the same impact. That's why we started with the exercise of imagining standing in front of Lord Nrsingadev and about to say something. And generally, the tendency, if you stand in front of Krishna, the tendency to say something, we have. After all, we are conscious beings who put words to our thoughts and aspirations and desires. Generally, what words would come out as soon as we come in front of either, you know, our Paramaguru, Srila Prabhupada, or spiritual master, or the deities? What are the first things that come out? Yeah. Generally, it's what we're dealing with. Huh? What'd you say? Help? Oh, that's fantastic. Please accept my obeisances. Generally, it depends on what we are dealing with at that moment. Generally. So if we are struggling, then it is help, let me overcome the difficulty. If we are in a bad mood, then we say, please let me come to the good mood, or I'm convinced why I should be in the bad mood. Yes, confirm it for me. Or something, whatever we are dealing with at that moment in life, that's what comes to our mouth in one sense, we say. Whether we say it loudly or say it aloud or somehow in our mind, that's what comes first. So for Prahlad Maharaj, who's dealing with this situation that his father has been ripped apart by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now it's a little difficult for us to imagine that situation, but as part of role playing, let's say, if our fathers were ripped apart like that, we can have one of two sets of emotions. One is we could become very sad and hurt and wondering, wow, what's going on? Or the other side, the extreme would be, good riddance, gone. This guy was troubling me, always told me that I was doing wrong, I'm happy he's gone. But it is happening in front of Prahlad Maharaj, and we notice that he's neither rejoicing, nor saying, What did you do, Lord Nrsingadev? Why didn't you forgive him? Because he is beyond the bodily identification. Because either of these extremes are bodily identifications. One is attachment, and the other is the flip side of attachment. It's called aversion. Both are bodily conception. Generally, we take aversion as detached, which is a wrong conclusion. Aversion is also an attachment. And Prahlad Maharaj is right in the middle. That this is neither attached nor averse. So that's in just the mood. That has just happened. And because that has just happened, the first words from his mouth are not about my father something. The first words he utters is Brahma Adayaha. He's referring to his Parama Guru, who is the spiritual master of his spiritual master. So for us, the appreciation is that he is referring to the head of the parampara, Brahma Adayaha. And then he gives a whole list. Brahmadaya, Suragana, Atha Api Siddhaha. And he says, so Atha Api Siddha means and everyone else included. So Lord Brahma, all the 33 million demigods, the munis, and the siddhas, and everyone else. That means pretty much the entire upper planetary system personalities have offered prayers to you. Which means every possible angle has been covered, philosophically speaking. Lord Brahma is speaking. The munis, they've covered all the other yogic angles. The siddhas, they've covered all the other things that they can say about you and their perspective of you from the philosophical perspective of siddhas, from the perspective of the munis, from Lord Brahma, from the demigods, the administrators of the universe, plus the four kumaras, etc. That means everything that can be said about you has been said. And how have they said it? First of all, who are these people? Sattvaika, Sattva ekatana gatayaha. Sattva means they're situated in goodness. And what kind of situation? This once in a while in the mode of goodness? He says, ekatana gatayaha. That means they've dedicated their life to living a mode of goodness lifestyle without any diversion into material activities. So these people do not do any materialistic activities. They are fixed in the mode of goodness lifestyle. That means their words are very pure. Whichever mode we are situated in, our speech is influenced by that mode. So if you are in the mode of ignorance, our words will be about destruction, sleep, it's alright, you know, like that. If you are situated in the mode of passion, our words will be about competing, winning, not losing, like that. Yes, we will do it. And those who are in the mode of goodness, their words are all about cooperation, whatever, service, kindness. That's the mode of goodness, duty. So he's saying that these personalities who are situated in the mode of goodness, from their minds and mouths, words are emanating that are very, very pure and perfect. And these words are also coming in a particular way. Vachasam means words, pravahe. Pravaha means like a stream. If we have to offer prayers, it's not streams, it's on, off, broken something. Then we say something to Krishna and we say, sorry, rewind, I didn't mean it that way. I didn't mean it that way, I meant it this way. And then you have to disclaim it, but actually it means that one. Just don't misinterpret my words, Krishna. You know, it's not like a stream. It's more like a vomit. You know, it just comes out. And then it's like, oh, sorry, not that way. These are streams of prayers that are perfect. So you see, and yet, right? And so he says, Naradhitum Purugane Adhuna Api Pipru. So he says that all of them have done such wonderful offered prayers. What can I say? And who am I to say anything? And what's running in my veins? He says, Ugra Jati. The last two words. Jati means the clan that one is born into. Because the word Jata means to be born. Jatasya hi dhruvam mrityo, like Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. So the word jati means the clan that one is born into, the family or the particular, you know, I'm born into such and such, whatever clans. And he says, my clan that I'm born into is Ugra Jate. Ugra means highly passionate. Passionate, or yeah, Ugra is this, that we are constantly seeking dominance. We're constantly seeking to dominate over others. We're constantly seeking to win over others. We're constantly seeking to destroy someone else. We're constantly seeking how to become powerful. We're constantly seeking how to become the only, one and only, undefeated, as they say in boxing matches. The only. That's what's running in my whole consciousness, because that's the, I'm Hiranyakashipu's son. And all of my family members are only thinking how to compete with Lord Vishnu. So what is it that I can say? What will come out of my mouth that will be pleasing to Krishna? This is the abject humility with which he is beginning to offer his prayers. Naraditum puruganair. Kim toshtum arhati. The last line. Kim toshtum arhati means, what qualification do I have to stand in front of you and please you? What have I done that can be pleasing to you? Nothing. From any angle that I see, I only see disqualification about myself. From any angle. Education-wise, oh, all these great demigods have spoken. What can I say? Quality of life, look at them. They're all from mode of goodness, perfected beings who don't get involved in any materialistic activity. What can I say? Who am I compared to them? When it comes to great position in the world, either as the demigods administering the entire universe, the munis who have figured out the ways by which to control the mind, the siddhas who have perfected their physical and subtle bodies. What am I in comparison to them? How can I please you? What can I say? I have nothing. I have nothing to offer you. Kim toshtum arhati. The only thing that has brought him in front of Lord Narsingadev, which is beginning in the prayer, he doesn't say it directly, is Brahma. Because Lord Brahma has asked me to do this. Because Lord Brahma has asked me to do this. Otherwise, what can I do? And what's interesting is in the previous verses, the demigods realize. The demigods, Goddess Lakshmi, Brahma, Lord Shiva, they all recognize that what's most pleasing for Krishna at this point of time, Narsingadev, is not any one of us, but him to be with his very lovable devotee, Prahlad Maharaj. So they all, that is their humility, they all step back and they nudge Prahlad forward. This is the humility that Lord Brahma is exhibiting. And in turn, Prahlad Maharaj is expressing, who am I? Unless Lord Brahma has given me this service to offer you prayers, to appease you, there is no other qualification here. No other qualification. I've searched all other places. Nothing. In the next verse, he gives a whole list of 12 different perfections one may have. We'll hear tomorrow. And he says, still, none of this is going to work. So in this verse, there is a word, naradhitum. Na aradhitum. So we are very familiar with two words, Radha Rani, right? That's one word. And we are also familiar with Aparadha. Aparadha means offense, and Radharani, of course, is the pleasure potency of Krishna. So these words have connection. The word Radha means that which attracts one towards Krishna. That which is the means of worshipping Krishna, and the means by which one can connect to Krishna. Therefore, worship is called Aradhana, because it's the means by which one becomes closer to Vishnu or Krishna. One becomes closer, one gets connected to. And Aparadha means that which destroys that connection, that which makes a person move away from. Radha, Aparadha. So we are very afraid of, or we are concerned about offenses, because they move us away from Krishna. And we are very concerned about serving Radharani, because she allows us to come close to Krishna. So he says, Na aradhitum arhati. I have no qualification. I haven't done anything. It's just not my to come closer to Krishna, except because Lord Brahma has given me this service to do. So Prabhupada begins the purport. A Vaishnava is fully qualified to serve, still thinks himself extremely low. So Srila Prabhupada, who is our beacon of Vaishnavism, our beacon for to always refer to and check against, is this the right behavior? Because he exemplifies perfect behavior. He knew that coming to America and bringing Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita to the public is not an ordinary task. And something that he has been trying for 40 years and nothing has manifested. Can you imagine that? We try for a few years, we give up, or at least whatever. He's tried for 40 years, nothing manifested, but still very determined. And his determination is not the determination of a materialist. His determination is only one thing. My guru has said it, therefore it will happen. My guru has said it, and I should make it happen. Even if it takes me another 40 years, I'm going to still try. Simply because my spiritual master has asked me to do so. That is his conviction. And he says, what else do I have? When he writes the Markina Bhagavat Dharma song, I have been given the title Bhakti Vedanta. And he writes about himself, I have neither bhakti nor Vedanta. How am I going to say? But my dear Krishna, if you empower my words, please empower my words in such a way that they can understand. Right? He never thought, I am Bhakti Vedanta, I have this wonderful title, here I come, let me speak, and they will all understand. He said, how will they understand? Unless you empower my words such that they can understand. Very, very deeply immersed in such humility as Prahlad Maharaj's. Very similar prayer. What can I say that will be pleasing to you? So he's also asking. And he says, if you desire, make me dance. Make me dance. That means, I am fully sold out to the instructions of my guru. He says, dance, I dance. He says, don't dance, I don't dance. He says, sit, I sit. He says, do this, I do that. He says, don't do this, I don't do this. He said, speak that, don't speak this, whatever. Whatever he says, that's what I am doing. And my guru has said, go to the west. I am 70 plus years. Just come off heart attacks on a cargo ship. Nothing with me, but I have this order. And the weight of that order is so heavy. It's so heavy that is what my whole consciousness is absorbed in from morning till night. Not about my health, not whether I'm going to live or die. It's not even relevant for me anymore. So Prabhupada writes, while offering prayers to the Lord, one should think of oneself very low. Now there's a little distinction. There was a devotee that in the beginning, now hopefully doesn't have the same thought, but for many years, this particular devotee was to always ask me, why are devotees with such low self-esteem? Why are they always so thinking low about themselves? Whenever you say something you've done nice, oh, I haven't done anything. Or, oh, I'm just a straw on the street. Oh, like here he's saying, I'm a worm in stool. I am just a pig. I'm just a dog, Prabhu. Why do they have such low self-esteem? So what would you say if someone asked you the question? Why do devotees have such low self-esteem? And it's here. Jagai madai haite muni se papishta urishera kita haite muni se lagishta. I'm a stool in the worm. I'm worse than Jagai and madai. Although I'm 96 years old and writing the Chaitanya Charitamrita in perfect Bengali poetry, I'm a stool in the worm. I'm a worm in stool, sorry. Imagine, to be stool in the worm is worse than in the worm. It's like I'm the stool in the worm was in the stool. Like, wow, I found a new level of humility. Like, this is unbelievable. Krishna Dachkara is only talking about worm in stool. I'm the stool in the worm who's in the stool. Why do devotees have low self-esteem? That's the question. What would you say? Justin, what would you say? I say that you need a mic first. And then, vachasam pravahai. Let the words come out as a wonderful stream.
Prepare yourself for a vomit. I'd say it's easy to mistake humility and low self-esteem.
Yeah, okay.
And I think sometimes... Oh, it's so loud. I think I actually had this question I was going to ask. Because sometimes, you know, I feel like I just have low self-esteem. It's not real humility. And there's like a big difference,
yes.
You know? Because low self-esteem is totally self-centered.
Yeah.
Where real humility, it's just... You're seeing the greatness of the Vaishnavs and Krishna and naturally... In comparison to them, you just feel so low. But so having low self-esteem is just totally self-centered, you know? It's so like, oh, you know, what do the people think of me? Mm-hmm. Oh, I feel like insecure. I want people to think I'm good at something. So anyways.
Yeah, very good. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Anyone else? The question was posed, why devotees seem to have such low self-esteem? What do you think, Joy? You look like a thinker.
Because the thoughts of the devotees are so absorbed in Krishna, his name, fame, form, paraphernalia, and pastimes, that in comparison to such glories, what qualities do we have, you know?
Mm-hmm. Versus why does it look like low self-esteem?
Because those who may perceive it as low self-esteem may not also be absorbed in thoughts of Krishna.
Mm. Okay, that's very good. Anyone else? Jordan?
I think it can be to protect ourselves from getting puffed up.
Protect ourselves from getting puffed up?
Yeah.
Okay. Although humility is a quality that protects
one from getting puffed up. And the example given is like humility is like the eyelid that protects the eye from getting hurt. As soon as something comes towards the face, the first thing that happens is the eyelids shut. So devotee's character supposedly should be that anything that comes by which one's pride can be inflated, humility is that thing that immediately protects. Versus, let it happen, man. I'm ready. So that's like, it's to protect. You're right. Jitendra Prabhu? Ladies, anything? Come on. Yes. One is hiding behind the other. All right, okay. So you're very qualified to say something now.
When the eyes leak, the head won't swell.
Okay, yeah, that's right. Nice one.
There is a saying.
He comes to this.
There is a saying, Prabhupada interacting with a devotee. A lot of devotees probably heard it. Maybe the younger devotees didn't hear it. Prabhupada was on a morning walk with his disciples, and one devotee kept saying, I'm the most this, I'm the most, you know, I'm the most fallen, you know, and he's going on and on. And then Prabhupada interrupts and says, you're not the most anything.
You're not the most anything.
So, I mean, I'm sure you've heard that before, but some of the devotees probably haven't heard that. I thought that was appropriate.
Thank you. So then, the difference, as Justin and Joey expressed, the distinction between low self-esteem and humility is that low self-esteem has to do with a very severe bodily identification. One thinks of oneself in comparison to others related to the body and mind. I am fat, I am thin, I am black, I am this color, I am short, I am tall, I am whatever, not good looking, etc., etc. And it has to do with, as Justin said, an image that one wants to hold in the eyes of others. What will they think about me? What will they say about me? And humility has to do with, on a spiritual level, it's on the level of the soul in relation to Krishna. Low self-esteem doesn't have Krishna in the picture anywhere. In fact, for low self-esteem persons, if Krishna is in the picture, they feel worse. Because once you start comparing with Krishna, oh, not only am I feeling bad, now I'm nothing at all. But it is in relation to Krishna and in relation to Krishna's devotees. And the mood always is to place other devotees higher than us. Because that's the estimation of a devotee. The others are higher than me. It's the mood of respect. It's the mood of appreciation. So here Prabhupada quotes Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, who definitely is way advanced. And he says, I am worse than Jagai and Madai. In the sense that Jagai and Madai got Lord Nityananda and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's direct mercy like anything. And that mercy transformed their lives to such a degree. So Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is saying, look at them, amazing devotees. And when he compares himself as the worm in the stool, it's not like low self-esteem. It's like, what is my, the only thing I can compare to in relation to Krishna and these great devotees is that. What does Krishna have and what do we have? What a massive distinction, right? Everything that Krishna has, he has in unlimited quantities, and not only for this event in time, but for all phases of time, In the past he had them, he has them now, and he shall forever have them. And how much can I have of any of these six opulences, let's say? We may have some now, we may be strong now, but very soon all that strength goes away. We may have some riches now, but when we say we have some riches now, that statement doesn't even touch any of us because we don't know what that means. Okay, what does that mean? Riches now. I don't have anything. So whatever, certain this power, this thing, that thing. We didn't have it earlier, or we may have had it earlier. We don't have it now. We may have it now, will not be with us. So in comparison to Krishna and Krishna's devotees, I'm nothing. Nothing. Yet we are given some service to do. So for us to remember that devotional service, the opportunity for executing devotional service, is a very, very special privilege. And that privilege has been given to us, gifted to us. It has not come about by my qualification or any one of our qualification. It has been something that has been gifted. Although I may not understand the value of that gift fully, I may not even appreciate the value of that gift fully or even partially. But that's the mood of a devotee. There's the saying, do not throw pearls before swine. If you throw pearls to a pig, the fellow will grunt and move on, but will roll in mud and stool. And the reason with these things is because of the bodily identification. Instead of pearls, dirt and sloth and stool are very attractive. So in one sense, pearls have been thrown in front of us. And we are learning to appreciate the value of those pearls. And while we are appreciating, our understanding on a day-to-day basis is, what's my qualification? Nothing. It's been gifted to me. And I'm very, very honored and privileged to have this opportunity. So it says similarly, Prahlad Maharaj thought of himself most unqualified to offer prayers to the Supreme Lord. Another feature of humility and so low self-esteem, if you will. Humility, although one understands one's disqualification, humility pushes a person towards Krishna. And low self-esteem, while one understands one's disqualification, it pushes one away from Krishna. So Prahlad did not say, I'm not qualified to offer any prayers, therefore I shall not offer any prayers. Turned around and walked away. It's the opposite. He is offering prayers. He is saying, what can I say? What can I say of anything valuable when all these great personalities have already said? And guess what? He's going to go for 25 verses and keep saying something or the other. So that's, if we ever want to assess, am I being really humble at this moment? Is whether that sense of humility is nudging us towards Krishna or nudging us away from Krishna? Towards the relationship or away from the relationship with Krishna? Now, while this is wonderful, we should also, as young devotees, as we are all young devotees, we should also know how much we can versus knowing our limits. That's very important. If we don't know our limits, then we may wrongly assess our capacities. So it's not always easy to assess one's own self, because we either over assess ourselves or under assess ourselves. But we should do. In fact, as an exercise, every devotee must evaluate oneself. How am I doing across the different departments or divisions of devotional life? And from time to time, ask our peers and superiors, please evaluate me. Tell me how I'm doing. How am I doing in this dimension, that dimension? Speak freely, tell me. And we should, when we ask them, we should be open to hearing it. Oh, okay, that's nice. That's an exercise we should do on a personal level to evaluate ourselves. Bhaktivinoda Thakur also suggests every night that one should evaluate oneself. So, while it is important to know our limits, we have the wealth of faith that makes us take that leap. We say leap of faith. But we should also know how far I can leap. For example, if we also decide, of course we won't, I'm trying to be a little funny here. We also decide to take a bag of cereal and the first part of Bhagavatam, Canto 1, and sit on a cargo ship and figure out to go somewhere else on a boat. Not now when we are 70 years old, we may not get the same result. If we do, fantastic. It may have to be a different planet because this planet's taken care of. It may be another planet, but whatever, you get the idea. We should know our limit. We should know how much we can, we cannot do. While we assess our limit, it's very important that we always, as they say, push that limit. It's our service to keep pushing ourselves and push that limit. It's not to say, I know my limit and therefore I will not move from this condition. We know our limit and we ask and learn how to push that limit further and further. This is the method of devotional life, practice of method. So for example, we all chant 16 rounds. We all know that we don't have the capacity that I chant Hare Krishna and tears are going to stream from my eyes and body is shivering or quivering with ecstasy. But we keep pushing that limit every day to improve on our quality. Right? We don't give up. Oh, this is all I can do. Forget it. If it happens, it happens. Right? No, we push that limit. We try. Every day we push that limit a little bit more. Can I try? Can I make an attempt? Can I try to invoke Krishna's mercy in a particular way for my japa, etc.? Okay, I'm going to pause and see if there are any comments, questions. Yes, Mukunda?
Hare Krishna. Thank you, Prabhu. I was trying to think how to word it, but I was just thinking, like, let's say, for example, there's a very skilled cook, and out of his humility, he wants to give others a chance to cook. But frankly, there's nobody around that's capable of cooking even at an adequate level. And meanwhile, he's, like, really good. So he could be humble in one sense and say, like, oh, I'm going to let this person cook because everybody should get a chance to cook for Krishna. But at the same time, I guess you could argue that it would be more humble for him to actually do the service himself because he's capable. I mean, I don't know how that would be humble. I don't know. You see what I'm saying? Because he would do it much more nicely. So it seems like it just makes more sense for Krishna's pleasure and the devotee's pleasure to allow somebody that's capable of doing it to do it. Not that we should give, you know, not that everybody in the world should get a chance to do it just because everyone should get a chance.
Mm-hmm. So while it is, first of all, humility means to act in one's real position. That's humility. For example, a Brahmin, very generally, a Brahmin's humility is to not pick up a weapon. A Kshatriya's humility is to pick up the weapon. And that's the whole point Krishna is driving into Arjuna's mind. Don't drop your weapons and walk away. Be humble, pick it up, and fight. Because your humility is to act in a position that is true to you. So while this cook, it's nice that he or she can cook in such a way that it's very pleasing to Krishna, the cook's mood is not, well, there's no one around, I'm the best, this is pleasing to Krishna. The mood can be, there's no one around, that is so unfortunate. So let me see how others can also learn how to cook. So my whoever cook is thinking, let my humility be such that I can train others. There's nothing wrong with that. Others can be trained. So let me assist in such a way that others will become better cooks than I. So it is pleasing to Krishna. And the mood is, if I can do this, that means anyone can do it. That's the mood of the person. If I can do it, anyone can do it. It's just that they may need more help, they may need more time. But if I can become a devotee, anyone can become a devotee. So at this point in time, you know, let's say I have the skill or whatever to cook for Krishna, skill and more experience. Let me see how others can get that experience. So at this point in time, this is what is what needs to be done. I have to cook. But can I bring others up and perhaps even higher than I? That's, does that address your thought? Yeah.
Hare Krishna. Prabhu, thank you for your class. You were making a nice point. Hello.
Yeah,
is it on?
It is.
It okay. you were making a nice point about Prahlad had clan blood.
Ugrajate.
Is that? So yeah. So I have a question in this regard, and that reminded me of even in this section on the Bhagavatam, the demigods wanted to kill Prahlad because he was related to Hiranyakashipu. They was like, kill him. He's definitely gonna be a demon. Mm-hmm. Then Narada Muni said no, and so. We generally have a tendency, I'm sure people can make the mistake that suppose you, let's say, preaching or whatever, you meet a Muslim and you're thinking, oh, so you're a terrorist. Or you meet a Christian, oh, you're a jerk. And I remember Bhakti Tirtha Swami when he came in contact with, you know, Krishna consciousness.
We don't think like that. Right?
Yeah. Of course we don't think like that.
Of course.
And when Bhakti Tirtha came in contact with Krishna consciousness, you know, the devotees, you know, treated him like, oh, you're black, that means you're stupid, huh? And so then he had to blame to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada said, yes, they're nonsense, but you're also nonsense if you can't tolerate and forgive. And so we could often make that mistake. How do we, because we may, like you said, we don't think that way. But oftentimes when we're dealing with, let's say, preaching Christians, we kind of raise ourselves to the platform of Prabhupada, like Uttamadikari, oh, you're a Christian, you eat meat, you're a demon, and then we make the mistake. And we may not say it, but, you know, people could feel our energy. So how do we keep this in mind all the time? Can you elaborate on this point a little bit?
Well, the principle is, whatever is in our heart, that is what we are preaching. So if in our heart, unfortunately, there is the severe bodily identification and the same, you're this and you're that, that's what's going to come out. So it's said that every preacher, using the word preacher, is preparing his or her consciousness daily to go beyond those distinctions and try ever so hard to see the soul and try to cut through and help that soul cut through the layers of matter. And for that, every preacher says, my dear Krishna, please empower my words in such a way that it reaches the soul. And while you're empowering my words, please help me not think that I'm the doer here. It's the preparation. If you, in the first canto of Bhagavatam, at the end, in the 19th chapter, that's when Parikshit Maharaj and Shukadeva Goswami meet. It's the second canto is when their conversation begins. And when Parikshit Maharaj asks his question, what is the duty of a person who's about to die? The first words out of Shukadeva Goswami is not, here's the answer. He goes on to offering prayers to Vyasadeva and to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, saying, please empower my words. Let my words be suitable to what this king is asking. So it's important. It's not like because I know a little philosophy, I'm a preacher. It is described. I just heard recently your spiritual master, Srila Radhanath Maharaj, speak that the person who's a preacher, their main duty is to connect every person to God or Krishna. And the expertise is in how best they can find ways and means to make that connection. And we were sitting, it was he, another devotee, and myself, we were sitting together, and he was expressing that when people feel affection from us, they will hear what we have to say. If we don't welcome them, or we don't feel, make them feel that, then they will not hear. Especially he was talking about people coming in news, how we see them, people we meet on the street, how we see them. How we see them will decide how they will receive us. Very important. So the block is from our side, mostly, if I'm talking of your question. And we try hard to break that. Jitendra Prabhu has one comment, and then we'll end at 8:30. I want to honor the time.
I don't know exactly where in the Gita it is, but it says one should do one's duty and not do somebody else's duty, although he can do the other person's duty perfectly.
Yeah.
So that's a little confusing there.
In the 18th chapter, when Krishna is describing each person in their own varna. Okay? Thank you very much. You have something?
Better to do your own duty, even if performed imperfectly, than to perform another's duty, even if you can be done perfectly. So you're saying, how could you do another's perfectly?
Okay, it's not on this topic. You and I can speak separately. I don't want to. The point is that one can try. Krishna is describing that one is impelled by one's nature anyway. And if one artificially tries to do something beyond their nature, even if they do nicely, it's better to do one's own nature. The point basically was, don't change your varna. In this case, Arjun wants to do something else. So it has a little bit more purport to it than the face value of the statement. Okay. Thank you. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.